Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are. And good morning. It's Wednesday, August 17th. Welcome to Wisconsin's Coffee Break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers will be along here in a bit. Brewers win in 11 innings, a walk-off two-run single by Victor Caratini, giving them a win over the Dodgers. Coming up in a few minutes, candidate for Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez at 9:15, State Assembly Rep Christina Shelton of Green Bay at 10:15, candidate for State Senate Jessica Katzenmeier. And Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join us for her weekly visit as well. First off, though, time for something I like to call a little Wiscommon sense. We already know that our nation's crisis goes deeper than seeking justice against one man, Donald Trump. Whatever happens with him, he's already poisoned the well. And the people who are still buying into his lies and excusing his conduct are going to be as difficult to contain as something that's in the water supply. But if we don't take this matter seriously, we are all in trouble. Fortunately, the voters of Wyoming represent the water in a small well, way off to our west. But it's clear something bad is spreading. Liz Cheney is a rock-ribbed conservative. Her political positions are polar opposites to many progressives and some independents. But she also knows we can't debate those positions as Americans if American democracy is poisoned, weakened, even destroyed and replaced with some form of authoritarianism. She'd love to lead, but she refuses to win and lead by cheating or by accommodating cheaters. I'd rather thought the good men and women of Wyoming understood that. Better to trust the fellow conservative who is your neighbor than the New York City millionaire who has provided nothing but lies and conspiracies. But Liz Cheney didn't even get 30% of the Republican vote in Tuesday's primary, losing to someone who's kissing Trump's rear end now, but was among the many, many Republicans warning in 2016 that Donald Trump was, in her own words, racist and xenophobic. But like so many, from Scott Walker to Lindsey Graham to far too many others in Wisconsin and America, the lure of power or something uglier is trumping an allegiance to American values about fair elections and respect for the law. A little closer to home, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is one of those who tried to have it both ways, using Trump's allure when it helped him politically, but other times trying to stand apart and be his own man. You can't do that with Trump. Be your own man. Be your own woman. You sell out when you sign up. There's no middle ground. Voss learned that the hard way, barely surviving a primary. Now he has to work to support Trump's two standard bearers in Wisconsin. Senator Ron Johnson, a purveyor of Russian disinformation and potential accomplice to Trump's attempt at a coup, and Connecticut businessman Tim Michaels, who's trying to buy the Wisconsin governorship by appealing to the same dark traits used by Trump: lies, division, machismo, racism, xenophobia, misogyny, class warfare, arrogance, and bluster. Now, only 30% of Wyoming Republican voters saw through the BS and voted to keep America that shining city on a hill where we can disagree, but disagree after elections that are free and democracy that's free of violence. Wisconsin voters, the bar doesn't seem that high, 30%, but I'm confident you can clear it in November and show the country this is what democracy looks like. As for Liz Cheney, she's not going to go away. And she can still look at herself in the mirror. Here's what she had to say last night after losing her primary challenge.
2 years ago, I won this primary with 73% of the vote. I could easily have done the same again. The path was clear. But it would have required that I go along with President Trump's lie about the 2020 election. It would have required that I enable his ongoing efforts to unravel our democratic system and attack the foundations of our republic. That was a path I could not and would not take.
There should have been more applause than that in Wyoming. It should have been statewide, and it should have been from border to border. And it's not that people aren't concerned. They very much are. New polling from Wisconsin came out yesterday by Public Policy Polling showing that a majority of voters understand the problem is not only Donald Trump, but with members of the Republican Party who are loyalists to Trump. And a majority think that Trump and his team who took part in the insurrection on January 6th should be criminally prosecuted. And that includes a majority of independent voters. People are concerned about Ron Johnson's actions on January 6th, where he very nearly delivered fraudulent electoral vote ballots to the vice president. People are concerned that Trump continued to push the lie even after he had been told, even after he knew that he lost the election. Former Wisconsin Republican Congressman Reid Ribble was part of the news conference on Tuesday with the new poll numbers that were revealed. And he made clear there at that news conference what he thought about Trump. He said, quote, in May of 2020, he began to talk about how he felt the election was going to be rigged. Clearly, he was seeing poll results that he was in trouble. So he began to talk about fraudulent ballots and the election being rigged. Trump knew if you kept pounding this, there would be a construct of voters that if he lost would say, yeah, the election had to be rigged. He has fooled enough of the people enough of the time. We'll have more to say about this throughout the morning, but coming up next, we get back to the gubernatorial election in Wisconsin with candidate for Lieutenant Governor, State Assembly Rep. Sarah Rodriguez. This is Up North News. Wednesday morning in Wisconsin. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Wrightlow, joined now by State Representative Sarah Rodriguez, who perhaps in just over 80 days will have a different title instead of Lieutenant Governor of the state of Wisconsin, depending on how things go in November. Representative Rodriguez, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
You were the winner of the primary for Lieutenant Governor last week in Wisconsin. Again, to explain to folks who might not know, in Wisconsin, the governor and Lieutenant Governor do not run as running mates ahead of the primary. The winner of the gubernatorial primary, you know, gets the running mate that he got as Lieutenant Governor. But in your case, that's a really good thing, given the experience and passion that you bring to the ticket. So let's start with just some quick background for our audience on yourself, where you're from, and what you did before you decided to enter the arena.
Sure. So I grew up in Wisconsin. I went to Brookfield East High School, you know, ran away for college for a little bit. But, you know, Wisconsin, it draws you back in. I wanted to raise my kids here. I am currently a state representative within the assembly. I represent District 13, and that is the western suburbs of Milwaukee. So mostly Brookfield, Wauwatosa, Elm Grove, West Dallas, and a little bit of Milwaukee. And I flipped that district this last election cycle from red to blue. So the reality is that I know how hard we're going to have to work to make sure that Governor Evers gets reelected this November. We are a purple state. I represent a purple district. And so I do believe I have that experience and insight to make sure that we're listening to all folks across Wisconsin. Prior to being in the assembly, I was a healthcare executive, managed large teams, multi-million-dollar budget. So I believe I could be a really good partner to Governor Evers in something as large and complicated as the Wisconsin state government. But for much of my career, and honestly, where my heart really lies is as a public health nurse. And that's the lens that I want to bring to the lieutenant governor's role. And you know, as a clinician, I know that the medicine we give you, the procedures that we do, it is such a tiny fraction of how healthy we are. It is really about where you live, the air you breathe, the water you drink, and whether you have a good paying job to put food on the table and to actually pay for those medications. I am a full-time working mom. I've got two kids in middle school and high school, and you know, you want to get stuff done, you give it to the full-time working mom. She's going to be able to do that, just add that to her plate and make sure it's successful.
What is it that you were seeing that said, well, I'm a full-time mom, a full-time worker. I'm involved in so many other things, but now I want to run for office as well. What was there a particular, you know, trigger or a particular topic, or what was it that you said, I need to do this too?
So when I ran for assembly, I was really the spring election that got me into the assembly. So I was an epidemic intelligence service officer with the Centers for Disease Control. So that means I did outbreak investigations nationally, internationally. And when I saw that the Republicans were playing politics with people's lives with COVID, I was just so frustrated and frankly angry that that was the leadership that was being shown in Wisconsin. So that's when I ran for assembly and ran and won because other people agreed with me. They were disappointed in the type of leadership that the Republicans were showing in the assembly and the Senate.
Coming from Waukesha, I think might raise some eyebrows for folks who don't pay a lot of attention to Wisconsin politics. They think of Waukesha as this deep red county, and it is in many ways, but it's also a very populous county. So along with Milwaukee and Dane, Waukesha County absolutely has a great number of Dems or truly independent voters who can vote either way. So you, from a geographic standpoint, are already bringing a block of voters in who might want to make sure Governor Evers is reelected.
Absolutely. You know, living in Waukesha County, I can tell you that the conversations that I'm having are changing. You know, the people who live here, they may have voted Republican in the past, but the divisive and radical out-of-touch policies that the Republican leadership are promoting today do not align with the values of most Wisconsinites and do not align with the values of the people who I speak with in Waukesha County.
When you heard that Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes was going to be running for U.S. Senate instead, and that Governor Tony Evers would need a running mate, why did you think that that was the next step for you? What is it that you think you are bringing to the ticket that is going to help him fend off an extremely aggressive and well-funded challenge by Tim Michaels?
Yeah. So, you know, when I looked at what we needed in Wisconsin, we did need a strong partner for Governor Evers. And, you know, I've got some big shoes to fill with Lieutenant Governor Barnes. I am ready and willing with his guidance to fill those shoes. So I wanted to make sure that we could bring different perspectives to the ticket. And I believe I bring that perspective, as a full-time working mom, as a nurse, and somebody who's worked in reproductive health care for almost my entire career. You know, with the falling of Roe v. Wade and the antiquated and absolutely terrible 1849 law that we have here in Wisconsin, you know, as a nurse, as a woman, as a mother, I know that these are real people's lives that we are talking about. And so that was another area that I thought I could bring to the conversation and the ticket, because I agree with what over 60% of what Wisconsinites agree with, which is that abortion services should be legal in most or all cases, and it should be a discussion between a woman or a person who's pregnant and their physician. And it shouldn't be something that's left to the legislature to decide, and particularly not this 1849 abortion law, where, you know, women didn't have the right to vote. Women couldn't own property at that point in time. And those are the kind of things that I have to make sure that we continue to talk about in Wisconsin and really highlight how divisive, radical, and out of touch the Republican leadership really is.
You're in the legislature right now, so you will understand the way that I'm going to frame this question, because in my mind, the Republicans sitting on such a massive budget surplus while being on a paid vacation is nothing short of an attempted heist in progress to basically take that money away from better uses and gear it toward tax cuts targeted toward the wealthy would be their plan if they could win the governorship and hold on to the legislature. In your mind, what should be done with that surplus now, and what would be your priorities as lieutenant governor for a new state budget?
So Governor Evers had already suggested putting some of that money back into Wisconsinites' pockets. He called a special session to be able to do that, and the Republicans refused to even have a discussion. They just gaveled out within seconds of him calling that special session to be able to actually put money back in people's pockets when we have an inflation and high gas prices today. Secondly, the governor has offered to put a temporary suspension on the gas tax within Wisconsin. That, again, would put dollars in people's pockets. And the Republican-led legislature is not even willing to respond to that suggestion. They would rather play politics than actually help put money back in people's pockets in Wisconsin. We can do both. We have enough surplus that we can do some targeted tax cuts to lower and middle income people, and also invest in our infrastructure. So invest in our roads, invest in our bridges, invest in our universities. Those are the kind of things that I'm going to be advocating for as Lieutenant Governor alongside Governor Evers to make sure we have a budget and a Wisconsin that works for everybody.
You have seen how Governor Evers has called several special sessions of the legislature to debate some of these very important issues, and has not even been given the courtesy of the lightest amount of debate on this. What is that like as a member of the minority party in the legislature to see how Republican leadership is using its gavel?
It's wildly frustrating. You know, when Governor Evers also called a special session to overturn the 1849 antiquated abortion law within Wisconsin, I was sitting in my seat. All of us, all the Democrats were sitting in our seats ready to do our job. And we just had one or two Republicans show up and gavel out, which means that all they did was say, basically, they opened the session and they closed the session without any discussion whatsoever. So here we are sitting ready to do our job, have that discussion with our Republican counterparts, and they refuse to even discuss it at all, have a conversation. That's what I hear from people in Wisconsin, which is they want us to work together. They want us to work together for a better Wisconsin. And the minority party, the Democrats, can't do that if the Republicans refuse to even have a discussion. So that's why we need to make sure we are voting Governor Evers in this November and voting all the way down the ballot to make sure that we have, you know, Democrats within the Assembly and the Senate that will continue to try to work across the aisle.
In terms of the economy, obviously a lot has happened, and then a lot can happen starting next year. You've had everything from the CARES Act to the American Rescue Plan, now the Inflation Reduction Act, but the American Rescue Plan funding is what Governor Evers has been using around Wisconsin as economic stimulus. What is next? What is next for you if you're advising Governor Evers as to the best way to continue stimulating and growing the state's economy?
So one of the areas that I'm really interested in is entrepreneurship. And depending on what kind of statistics you look at across the country, we have one of the lowest rates of opening up small businesses in Wisconsin. And I'm talking about those small businesses that pay for dance lessons and soccer shoes and all of those things. One of the areas that Governor Evers has been very successful with is he has a program for Main Street Bounce Back where people can get $10,000 to be able to open up their business in a vacant storefront on the main street of cities and towns all across Wisconsin. And that has been wildly successful. And so making sure we can expand on programs like that help folks that want to be able to open up their own business, give them a little bit of a boost ahead, and make sure that we are keeping those storefronts on Main Street open so that people can walk down Main Street and see that bustling, vital city that we know we all want to live in.
Sarah Rodriguez, state representative and candidate for lieutenant governor, joining us. Just a couple of minutes left here. So I want to end with our audience up north. Now, what a state assembly rep and candidate from the Milwaukee suburbs is saying on your travels up here. What is it that voters, especially centrist, self-described independent voters, should know about somebody from the southeastern corner of the state before deciding how to vote for lieutenant governor?
So my roots run deep in Wisconsin. You know, my mother grew up on a dairy farm outside of Richland Center and went to a one-room schoolhouse all the way through eighth grade. My uncle owns a small farm outside of St. Croix Falls. And so, you know, I have been going across the state. This is a statewide campaign. And when I speak to folks all across the state, there are commonalities that really unite us, whether that's good schools, making sure people want to stay safe in their communities. But there are specific things that folks in more rural areas find important, which is the water and the environment is something that I hear quite a bit up north, as well as broadband access. And that's something that Governor Evers is working on.
And has quite a record on that as well. Candidate for Lieutenant Governor, Sarah Rodriguez, state rep from the Waukesha Brookfield area. Thank you so much. It was great to visit with you.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day. We'll be back with more after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Well, I can see this is going to be the revenge of the producer today when I happen to mention that, you know, I have a soft spot for Yacht Rock. He's now going to grab the absolute schlockiest of the schlock and play that for us. So thank you, Luke. Appreciate that very much.
I'm delivering. I'm delivering.
Sure. Yep. No disagreement. I did not, you know, say play the good Yacht Rock. I left it wide open. So.
Oh, yeah, see, we'll I'm a novice here. I don't know what the good or the bad Yacht Rock is. So yeah, without direction, I'm sorry. I'm at the behest of YouTube telling me what Yacht Rock is.
All right, making a note. We're going to do the Yacht Rock game. And we're going to do some rankings, and we're going to invite everybody else to submit what they think are the best and worst examples of Yacht Rock. And so to do that, send us an email. Goes to radio@upnorthnewswi.com or give us a call, 715-388-7155. It's not often that you hear a United States senator praise a confessed criminal, even one that hasn't been charged yet, but publicly confessed to and bragged about their crimes. But that's what we have in Senator Ron Johnson, based on a recent appearance and as reported by WISN TV Channel 12 out of Milwaukee, reporting that Senator Ron Johnson praised the man who fraudulently requested absentee ballots in the names of several people, including Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Ron Johnson said of Harry Waite, quote, "He was a white hat hacker." You have some more sound, Luke, on what else Ron Johnson had to say about Harry Waite.
Well, he's a white hat hacker. He totally admitted he was trying to show a vulnerability. There was no malign intent to what he did. I appreciate what he did.
But he committed a felony, didn't he, under the law?
I certainly wouldn't prosecute whatever he did. I appreciate what he did. I think he did the public service showing a vulnerability that obviously WEC isn't concerned about.
I think that's a complete and total abdication of the role of a U.S. senator. This man, according to his own confession, broke the law, did so intentionally under the guise of some sort of weird attack on our absentee voting system, which, if you don't break the law, works very well.
That was Ann Jacobs from the Wisconsin Elections Commission responding on Channel 12 to what Ron Johnson had to say. Johnson said in that clip, there was no malign intent to what he did. Yes, there was. This entire charade, this entire circus is about malign intent to undermine Wisconsin elections, which work unless you cheat. You're not proving voter fraud, especially on any widespread basis, by committing voter fraud as an individual. That simply says you know how to commit a crime and get through a system that otherwise works. And as Ann Jacobs said, there are plenty of checks and balances in the system where Harry Waite would have been found and where the system works. So for a U.S. senator to praise this would normally be a shocking thing, but these are not normal times, and Ron Johnson is not a normal senator. Ron Johnson was minutes away from being a willing participant in an attempted coup. if Vice President Mike Pence had decided to go along with Donald Trump's scheme to delay or even overturn the election, it would have happened with Ron Johnson delivering a fraudulent ballot from a fake slate of Wisconsin electors. And the plan was that Mike Pence was going to take that ballot from Johnson, and as he counted the votes, was going to declare that these are the actual electoral votes from the state of Wisconsin, not the ones that were certified in a free and fair election that had been subject to recounts and audits and many court cases. Had Mike Pence decided to go along with this, there would have been even more chaos on January 6th. There would have been more bloodshed. There would have been more deaths. And as we've now learned from the January 6th committee, Donald Trump was angrily trying to get his security detail to take him to the Capitol. He had this amazing fantasy that he was going to be able to appear at the U.S. Capitol after Mike Pence, you know, had declared him the winner and assumed control. That anybody would go along with something like that, whatever your party, should be something shocking. Obviously, think if, you know, Hillary Clinton had tried to do something like that, or, you know, Barack Obama, or, you know, Richard Nixon back in the day. It is unimaginable. And yet Donald Trump has made the unimaginable, not just imaginable, but very nearly real. And to have senators like Ron Johnson and congressmen like Tom Tiffany and Scott Fitzgerald as willing accomplices in this simply shows why it's not a big surprise that Senator Johnson is praising somebody who committed a felony, admits it, but is looking for friendly treatment from the Trumpers out there, like the Racine County Sheriff, Christopher Schmalling, who was not going to investigate and in fact praised him as well. It is Sheriff Schmalling who talked about, you know, the crimes being committed by the Wisconsin Elections Commission. What was their crime? Their crime was trying to make it easier for people in nursing homes to vote during a pandemic. But Schmalling, being completely in line with the Trump mindset, wanted to attack that rather than, in this case, the very actual fraud that's being committed. Now, Ron Johnson acting this way has not gone unnoticed, obviously. And earlier, I alluded to a new poll, brand new, from Public Policy Polling, released on Tuesday. The statistics here say 546 Wisconsin voters were surveyed just a few days ago, the margin of error of 4.2%. And I'm going to scroll down to make sure I'm correct when I say this. Yeah, as it turns out, in this particular survey group, 46% said they voted for Donald Trump in 2020, and 46% said they voted for Joe Biden. So this is a group equally split between Trump and Biden voters. So keep that in mind when you hear some of the answers to these questions. Senator Ron Johnson goes one question, played an active role in former President Trump's scheme to overturn the election, and is now calling for Wisconsin Republicans to consolidate power over election administration in the state. These are true statements. Does hearing this give you very serious concerns, somewhat serious concerns, or no real concerns? As you might expect in a poll of the Wisconsin population in general, 42% have no real concerns, because that's the Republican base right there. It's about 42%. You know, you have 42 to 45% of Wisconsinites are in the Republican base, 42 to 45% are in the Democratic base, and then the rest are independents and people who don't want to say where they are. So it's not a big surprise that 42% have no real concerns, but 55% have very serious or somewhat serious concerns. And in a close state like Wisconsin, you know, that makes all the difference. And throughout the questions in this poll, by and large, the Trump or Republican position is in that low 40s range. Now, I'm not saying that that necessarily projects what's going to happen come November. However, it is very indicative that the Wisconsin population is concerned about what happened on January 6th. The survey shows that they do have support for what the January 6th committee is looking into. When they were asked what they thought, when Trump's lawyers and his own attorney general told him there was no widespread voter fraud, but they decided to claim voter fraud anyway, you're now up to 68% of those surveyed saying they have real concerns about that. So thankfully, we still have 68% of the Wisconsin population not a big fan of lying. They want to win elections fairly. So then the question was asked, taking it to its Wisconsin extension for November, for candidates for office who downplay the events of January 6th or oppose the committee investigating it, does that make you less likely or more likely to vote for the candidate, or does it not make a difference? Now the number is 20% say that if a candidate downplays the events of January 6th, 20% says it actually makes them more likely to support the candidate. So, I mean, that is the Trump base right there. You have 25% that say it wouldn't make a difference, but you have nearly half, 47% of voters say it would make them less likely to support a candidate if they tried to downplay the events of January 6th. Exhibit A for that would be Congressman Tom Tiffany, who recently called the January 6th committee a sideshow, and who this week co-signed a letter seeking to have the confidential FBI informants outed, leaked, made public, even as the investigation into Donald Trump for violating the Espionage Act is still going on. So the poll shows you that while there is still a Trump base out there, there are also a growing number of Republicans who have concerns and who may not tolerate this come November. They may decide that they have seen enough. They either need to take a break from voting, at least for Trump allies, or voting for Republicans. Maybe they'll vote for Democrats. Maybe they'll stay home. Not sure. But count among those who have clearly seen Donald Trump for what he is former Republican Congressman Reid Ribble. He spoke at a news conference Tuesday on behalf of the Defend Democracy Project, which released that poll. And he said what has been, you know, revealed in the January 6th committee. Donald Trump knew he was going to lose. He was likely to lose. He lost the popular vote last time around, and he was, you know, fooling fewer people, you know, this time. And so as a result, as we know, months before the election, he started talking about it being rigged. And Reid Ribble said as much at the news conference yesterday.
In May 2020, he began to talk about how he felt the election was going to be rigged. Now, clearly, he was seeing polling results that showed that he was in trouble and his reelection was in trouble, and for a whole bunch of reasons. But without regard to that, he was aware that he was not likely to win. The American people had gotten tired of the chaos of the Trump presidency. His likability was really low when you compared it to other presidents. And so his campaign was in trouble. So he began to talk about mail-in ballots. He began to talk about fraudulent ballots. He began to talk about the election being rigged. And, you know, my father had a statement that he always told me when I was running my roofing company. He said, you know, just remember, it's always easier to scam somebody than to convince somebody that they've been scammed. And Trump knew this principle that if you kept pounding this, there would be a construct of voters that if he lost would say, yeah, the election had to be rigged.
And so there is. There is still a group out there that believes the election was rigged despite zero evidence. You can hint at it all day long. That's just being hidden. It hasn't come out yet because it's not there. Ribble went on to say that the January 6th committee has presented a credible case in how laws were broken, how participants in the conspiracy to overturn the election need to be held accountable, and how the episode demonstrates the need for all Americans to protect democracy. Ribble said he had concerns about the committee being too partisan, but then, as he noted, quote, virtually all of the witnesses so far have been Republican, so in fact, it has been partisan on the Republican side, as those who do see Donald Trump for what he is and see the conspiracy for how serious it was are speaking up. They don't always win, but they will in the end. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is Up North News. We'll be back to wrap up this hour in a moment.
FM and WXCO 1230 AM, Cronenwetter's choice for news, talk, and sports radio. Streaming 24/7 at BullFallsRadio.com.
Well, if we're going to talk about glory days, we better get back to Yacht Rock in just a minute or two here. But first, to let you know, the Brewers win in 11 innings with a walk-off single by Victor Caratini. Dodgers had scored one in the top of the 11th. The Brewers end up scoring two in the bottom and so far have split their series against the Dodgers, and they will play again this evening. Coming up at 9:15, State Assembly Representative Christina Shelton of Green Bay will visit with us. At 10:15, State Senate candidate Jessica Katzenmeier and Dr. Kristen Lierley will be along. Tomorrow, Joe Zepecki will join us because there is a new Marquette poll coming out later today. And so Joe will join us to talk about, you know, what we can read into those results. That is a larger poll of Wisconsin voters, and it's going to tell us a lot as we head into the final push for the general election season. And then on Friday and Monday, we will have guests from Netroots Nation, the big national convention of progressive activists and digital bloggers and others who are coming together to talk about what are the themes for this fall that resonate most with their audiences. And so we'll find out what they are learning about that. But in much, much lighter news, you may be familiar with the book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie. Our reporter, Christina Lorre, posted on Up North News at upnorthnewswi.com. If you give a class a calf, if you're looking for a classroom pet, you might want to consider a 100-pound dairy calf with no cage or cleanup required. From now through September 15th, teachers can register for Adopt a Cow, a free year-long experience that allows classrooms to follow a calf through the first year of its life on a Wisconsin dairy farm. I can already hear my wife, who grew up on a dairy farm, saying, wait, that's not how you have a calf. You have a calf by basically, you know, feeding it, watching it, you know, pooping its own food, having to clean things up, having to deal with a cow that's trying to kick you while you're milking it. Let's get the kids doing that in the classroom.
Wait, do I have to be a classroom to adopt a calf? Because this sounds awesome and I want to do it on my own.
No, you do not have to be in the classroom.
Oh my gosh.
Pat reads on from Christina Laurie's story. Every classroom that enrolls is paired with a calf. Students are sent photos, stories, and other information throughout the school year about the calf's life on the farm, food, living areas, how the farmers care for them, and more. Who can apply? Preschool teachers, elementary, middle, and high school students, assisted living facilities, daycare programs, homeschool classrooms, libraries, scout troops, 4-H groups. Adopt a Cow is open to participants in all 50 states and countries around the world. And given how much I've talked about my knee and such, Luke, I believe you qualify as being part of an assisted living facility. The way that you're helping me out here.
There we go. I was going to say, I was a little concerned because I wasn't qualifying for any of those categories, but I believe you may be correct then.
Mm-hmm. There are several farms around Wisconsin that are helping with the program. Each farm is committing at least two calves to the program, which is being run by Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and Discover Dairy. Dairy is quite literally a Wisconsin moneymaker, Christina writes, a $45 billion industry. And Adopt a Cow is a chance for students to learn about the state's contributions to the national and the world economy and the food supply. And of course, the lessons are educational as well. And let's be honest, I don't think any of the kids are listening that are going to adopt a cow. I don't think they follow it to its natural end, whether that's at McDonald's or, you know, some other, you know, meat market near you, but I'm sure they will focus on the dairy and on the yummy cheeses and the butter, you know, the curds. But there's a little bit more to the life cycle of a calf.
That's beyond the first year, though. So if you're just focusing on the first year.
That's more your 400 level class, not your 100 level.
Exactly.
Perhaps. Okay. Exactly. I get it. But some of us have to learn. Some of us learn differently. Some of us city kids learn about farming firsthand, and it wasn't always pretty. When I started dating the woman with the courage to marry me in college, and I made my first trip to her dairy farm where she grew up near Manitowoc, we got there, you know, early in the evening. Evening milking was in progress with her parents and her five siblings. I'm ushered into the barn, brought, you know, halfway down, taking in the sights, the sounds, the smells. And of course I don't get to shake Billy's hand, you know, her dad, because, you know, they're a little busy, and that's understandable. But then he says something to me as the brand new boyfriend, and I'm watching the siblings, and they range in age from high school senior down to, I think, 8 years old at that point or something. You know, do I want to help out? Well, of course, says the city boy who just showed up from a college campus after a, you know, a 3.5 hour drive. What can I do? I want to impress this girl. I want to impress her family, you know, sign me up. I see what they're doing. They're putting the milking, you know, the milkers on, and it doesn't look that tough. You take each one, you slide it over an udder, and it, you know, clamps on, and the suction does its thing. So that's fine. Cows on a family dairy farm quite frequently don't have names yet. I'm sure some of the classroom calves might, but they most frequently have numbers. They have little numbered tags on their ears. And so her dad says, hands me one of the milkers and says, well, why don't you go do number 42? All right, fine. You know, you're supposed to step into the stanchion there and lean over. Well, I didn't get a chance to lean over. So I didn't. In other words, he didn't take this all the way to its conclusion. He right away, I hear him laughing, and he says, no, no. And I step back. And once I'm back, you know, in the alley, I then look down and realize there's no udders down there. And you don't want to put a milker on what I did see.
42 was a bull.
I thought that was hilarious. I knew right then and there that I was going to be just fine with that family. I'm sure there might be other city kids that, you know, got upset or offended or whatnot, but that laugh of his, and then the laugh coming from the siblings and my girlfriend at the time, told me that I was in a good bunch. A, because they have a sense of humor. B, because they didn't let me die. They said things and started laughing before I really had a chance for that bull to do what that bull would have done if I had decided to
try to milk it.
Carry on, shall we say. Sure, you can put it that way. So if you give a class a calf, and if you register for the Adopt a Cow program, just keep in mind you're getting one version of life on a dairy farm, but you could do others. Just don't do everything that they tell you to do in the barn. We'll be back with more in our next hour. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow.